Welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, where they discuss Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Here's your hosts, Corey Butler and Ira Carlson.
Today's episode is supported by Turtles Bar and Grill in downtown Shakopee, known for having the Southwest Metro's best selection of local craft beer. Follow Turtles Bar and Grill on Facebook or Twitter, or visit turtlesbarandgrill.com to stay aware of tap takeovers and other events showcasing the best beer from your favorite breweries. Hello and welcome to episode number 36 of On Tap with Corey Nair. I am Corey Butler.
And I'm Ira Carlson.
And we're here as a bi-weekly visit to you if you're listening live on KYMN Radio, 95 to 1 FM in Northfield, Minnesota, streaming live on kymnradio.net, or if you're catching us after the fact through ontapnorfield.com. Or the many, many podcast platforms out there. We thank you either way that you're joining us. Like I said, we check in about twice a month, bi-weekly, with different Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. We have people on to talk about their exciting lives in the brewing industry and occasionally the wine and cider and spirits industry. And today we've got quite the show coming up. We've had this one on the calendar for a while, but it's been preempted a little bit by eagle watching. And that'll make a little more sense once we get into the interview. But Ira, who's on today?
Oh, we got Kent and Carla, who are coming up from Reed's Landing, which is a small little combination brewery restaurant down on the way between, just a little south of Lake City. So they're in talking a little bit about their beer and also their restaurant. And, of course, what you can do while you're at the restaurant. I think you maybe foreshadowed that just a hair there.
Beautiful blink and you'll miss it, Reed's Landing.
Oh, like, yeah.
You need to almost anticipate that. Oh, that's my turn.
Yep. Yeah. No, it's a really fun place. We've got Andrew in talking a little bit of styles a week. Today, it's a gluten-free. So, we normally talk a lot of styles about their flavor and everything else. It's a little more about the composition and what
different
makes
category
it,
of beer.
Right. And what kind of makes it a gluten-free beer and stuff. And so, it's going to be kind of a fun show. In fact, I even had a chance after we talked to Kent and Carla to swing on down to Reed's Landing and get a little food now that the summer has broke.
Yeah, as I say, we talked to him a few weeks ago. Again, scheduling is always fun to do with folks. Everyone's got a different schedule, and we try to accommodate the best we can. Obviously, they're running the business, as is everyone who's on our show. And so we recorded this maybe 3 weeks ago, and you and Steph took a drive down not long after and enjoyed some of their food and the view. And it's a great conversation. We were talking before the show that probably very little editing will come to this one. You know, we usually have a couple gaffes, namely you or me messing up.
Of course.
This one was pretty clear, and we think it was a great conversation. You get to really learn about them. They're new business owners. They've kind of worked through life, did the corporate thing, and are still got one foot in, but are embracing the dream that they've had for a while. So it's kind of cool to see people do that. And as we've talked time and time again on the show, the reason we do the show is just to find out how and why people do this. There's so many different models out there.
Well, and especially to be new business owners in the sense of not only, the restaurant business in itself is can be quite a handful, and as well as the brewery business and everything you have to learn.
It's two businesses.
Yeah. And, so it is hard to do, and then to only do it with 1 year in. But they got really lucky in the fact that they found a space that happened to be for sale with a well-established business, a well-established building, some great staff, and obviously a great location. So if you're going to start a business or take over one, that was a pretty good one to pick up. So,
and all those factors came into their decision and said, this is the way we should go. So stick around for that. We've got a number of things we need to talk about before we get to the interview, though. I'm going to take a little tangent here. I didn't tell you about this before, but you knew that this week I've been spending time building the patio, and I've spent about 4 hours this morning, the day we're recording, digging. And I just want to give a shout out to all our listeners who are in manual labor, who are carpenters, who are landscapers, who are digging ditches, plumbing, whatever they do. Holy hell. We're just a couple keyboard warriors, and I spent 4 hours digging a 300 square foot patio. Well, what hopefully will turn out to be a patio. And we did some stuff before this, and I'm ready for a nap. So hopefully I can get through the show, but kudos to those. I mean, obviously the world, we don't need to get in too far into this, but this world doesn't turn without people who are willing to put a little back into it. So thanks to those guys. And we'll drink to you today. At least I'm going to drink to you. I'm drinking to you right now.
I'm up for it.
Jeez, did I need it. And one of the good beers we are drinking, we did do a video on Facebook and Twitter earlier this week about the Thunder Lizard Double Dry Hopped IPA. It's a cool collaboration between Black Stack Brewing in St. Paul and the Science Museum of Minnesota, also in St. Paul, but of Minnesota. For those who aren't in the know, last year, a little show called Stranger Things on Netflix kind of been blowing up the world last year and a half, 2 years, with through their first two seasons. One of the characters wore a Thunder Lizard, I think it was a sweatshirt, it might have been a t-shirt.
Yeah, it was a sweatshirt.
Thunder Lizard sweatshirt, which originally was produced by the Science Museum of Minnesota back in the 80s, and it was just part of their original run of apparel, and because the show Stranger Things takes place in the 80s, it just worked out well for the Science Museum, so they hopped on that and reintroduced that apparel line, and I think they did the sweatshirt and maybe a t-shirt or a couple different types of clothing, and they raised more than $500,000, which is awesome. People bought into it. It's always good when something becomes popular again and when the nonprofit can benefit from it. So they raised a bunch of money. Long story short here, they raised a bunch of money. And part of that money has gone toward creating a kind of like a science van that will travel around the state, all 87 counties, and introduce science to kids, namely, I'm guessing, but probably some of us older folks too who need to be reintroduced, just like the Thunder Lizard. And it's just going to be a great educational opportunity to let people know about fact-based science, which is pretty important nowadays. We won't go down that road, but it's good to know about facts, good to know about science. And they raised a bunch of money, which is great. And now they're bringing a little more attention to that effort by working with Black Stack to do the Thunder Lizard Dry Hopped Double IPA, which is a tremendous beer we talked about on Facebook. They had a big event 2 weeks ago. We didn't have the opportunity to make it to that, unfortunately, but we did get a crawler in our hands, and it's got some really good stuff. Zeus Hops from Minnesota's own Mighty Axe Hops, which is up near St. Cloud. And then they use Azaka. I think I might say that wrong. We're not brewers. We say that all the time. It's either Azaka or Azaka, I'm sure, in the Whirlpool. So it's dry hopped with Australian Vic's Secret Hops. And it's a tasty beer.
Oh, yeah. And do not underestimate the haziness of this thing. This thing is bright and hazy and citrusy, and the hops really do come through. So it's a lot of big flavor but up front, but then it actually ends up finishing kind of dry. It doesn't have an aftertaste to it, doesn't linger too much, so kind of a lot of fun flavor right to begin with, and then it kind of fades out a little bit.
I think it's great beginning to end, and I think it's a great collaboration, obviously. And I think the name really fits the style. So kudos on them. I'm sure they developed a couple different ideas that could work with that name. And to me, when I think of Thunder Lizard, this is kind of, it really, I think, shines through. So that's awesome for them. It is available now in stores where Black Stack Brewing crawlers are available. They do have pint cans out as well, but I'm assuming crawlers don't make it to all the same outfits. But look for them out there. And obviously you can get at the brewery. And for those who don't know, if they've been to Can-Can Wonderland, just north of University, kind of close to 280. This is their neighbor. They're in the same building, I believe. So,
yeah, people are kind of coming in and out with their kids, going in and out of Can-Can, and they kind of share a common hallway. And so it's a really big space. I was expecting it to be a little more echoey, just due to the size and an old factory kind of a space. But whatever they treated the ceilings with worked really well. So last time I was there, it was absolutely packed. Cars were having a hard time finding parking spots, and my wife and I sat there and were able to hold a conversation with pretty much no distraction whatsoever. So really nice space, good beer.
And I say for those who've been to Can-Can but don't know about Black Stack, because I've been to Black Stack, and while I know about Can-Can, I have not been to Can-Can. So I hear they're both worth the trip. I can attest for Black Stack. And
there might be a couple other breweries around there if you're trying to make it just little bit of a circuit. So
yeah, Bang Brewing, Urban Growler, Lake Monsters right there. Dual Citizen just opened this last fall, winter. So yeah, that's a great little brewing area. It's kind of like the northeast Minneapolis of west side of St. Paul. So and Surly's just across 280, so just across the city limits. So it's a great little brewing area. I don't know if it's been coined a certain name for the geographic area, but great spot to go check out a bunch of high quality breweries. Speaking of breweries, because this is a brewing show, we got a little news to cover today. A couple updates on some Southern Minnesota stuff. We've got Angry Hog Brewing in Austin getting closer to opening. We've talked about them a few times in the show. The last I've read, they're getting close to their final state inspection. So maybe later this summer, maybe July. I don't know. We can't prognosticate too much here, but sooner than later, they should be opening. So that's another option.
I'm hoping for the sooner, because it would make the little road trip to watch the Dukes take on Austin a little more enjoyable.
And what date is that?
I'm going to have to look at that one. I don't have, know the one off the top of my head.
You don't have the calendar in your head?
No, I don't.
What kind of PA announcer are you? Should be advocating for every game.
There's scripts in front of me.
There you
go. I can't be counted to think.
So that's cool. That's not too far away from the Northfield area. And obviously for anyone driving down 35, they're just kind of a holler off of there. So that's great to see them come.
And a field's kind of a nice little empty pocket, an empty void right in that zone or that part of Minnesota. So it'll be nice.
Yeah, you get south of Faribault and there's not much going on. You got Oswald and Blue Earth, but that's a little stretch off of 35 to the west. So it's a good space. So there's definitely opportunity. And speaking of opportunity, there's another one.
But speaking of opportunity, are they going to take the opportunity to do a collaboration spam beer? I'm just going to throw it out there right now.
I didn't even think about that, Angry Hog. Although Spam's been in the news for some bad stuff the last couple weeks, so it'll probably roll over. Hey, people who love Spam.
Yep.
And heading west from there, from the Austin area, Worthington is in the works to have their own brewery. So we've had Take 16 on. They're from Laverne, which is in the southwest corner. Worthington's kind of like the regional hub in southwest Minnesota off of Highway 90. I don't know, I think maybe a half an hour from Laverne, roughly. So Forbidden Barrel Brewing is looking to open early next year. So that's exciting. We've taken that long trip down. We did our big day trip of the winter, warmer, excellent Corey, Ira, adventure, whatever the hell we called it, and hit a bunch of places, including Take 16. Would have been nice if they were open a year prior, the new Forbidden Barrel Brewing. But we'll have to take a trek down there next year maybe when they open. So that's good. That's Take 16 is a great brewery and does a lot of great things, but you know, they're in a smaller community and I'm sure people travel there, but Worthington being kind of the regional hub, it's a prime spot to have a brewery. And then lastly on the news front, we've kind of got an exciting announcement to make. We teased this last couple shows. We're waiting for the full list of participating breweries to make it out, but we will be at All Pints North this year. That's kind of the mecca of Minnesota brewing festivals. You know, there's a lot of great ones run by the Guild, run by the Growler, other places. But this is kind of the one people like, and I think largely because of the location, right? You can't go wrong. It takes place in Duluth. It's right on Bayfront Park, so you're looking at the water. It probably isn't too hot because you got the wind coming off the water, even though it's late July. And we're going to be there. We've made the big time. We're now accepted and allowed into these events. Although I should say they did invite us to the Autumn Brew Review last year, which is also a Guild event. And that was awesome because that's in Minneapolis and a great event. But we like Duluth. So we're excited to go up and check out this place. We're planning to chat with a number of either brewers if they're there or their reps from the breweries with a focus on Southern Minnesota breweries. There's about a dozen or so Minnesota breweries in the whole list of breweries. I mean, there's dozens and dozens and dozens of breweries that are going to be there. These events are always great to try a little bit here, try a little bit there, especially for those places where you don't get to because they're a little bit ways from you. So if you're in Northfield, you probably don't get to Ely very often to try their beer, or even Duluth. If you live up in the Northland, you probably don't get to try Island City in Winona very often, or Tanzawald or Giesenbroy, all of which will be there. So we'll catch up with a couple of our old friends, I'm sure, maybe Island City, Giesenbroy, maybe Shells, depending who's there. But maybe we've talked about this. Maybe we'll chat with some folks who've been nice enough to send us some samples and catch up with them and give them a little more time on the show and see what they're doing. We're kind of still working out how we want to approach the show, but we will have a show after the festival dedicated to the festival. So one way or another, we'll have content. And whether that's a couple longer conversations or several shorter conversations, we'll be up there and working our tails off, talking to people and just having a good time, I'm sure, too, you know, because, you know, beer, weather, Duluth, it'll all be good.
Yeah, well, and I'm looking forward to it because I actually stumbled across, I want to say it must have been the first one, because there wasn't more than maybe 12 vendors total, you know, and kind of like a quick somebody playing some music set put together and very limited foods. So it was really at the infancy of it. And my wife and I just happened to be up in Duluth at the time. So I'm really,
it's a good thing to stumble into.
Oh yeah, it was well worth it. I mean, we'd already been out and about. We were kind of celebrating our anniversary and moving around, and we'd already walked probably about 15 miles for the day, and like stumbled across that, and like, can we get in? And managed to have a lot of fun in a short period of time at the end of it. So, I'm definitely looking to go now with so many more actual brewers there, really bringing their A game stuff and, you know, trying to, you know, try different things and see what's out there. So really looking forward to it and getting a little creative on lodging too. So it'll be fun.
Well, maybe we'll save that for another show.
Yeah.
I think that's a story worth sharing.
Yes, of course.
Although maybe you don't want to let people know where you're staying. Never know how the day is going to go. But just a couple, I mean, like I said, dozens and dozens of places, just some highlights here as I scan through for me at least. But really it's hard to go wrong with any of these places. I've been to, as you know, just about every brewer in the state, except for some of them that have maybe opened up in the last 2 or 3 months, depending on location. But 12 Eyes in St. Paul is going to be there. Obviously, Shells is great. Back Channel over, I always get this wrong. Is it Spring Park or Spring Lake Park? I think it's Spring Park because there's two of them, but this is the one by Lake Minnetonka. Bad Habit, we've had their beer on the show. They're awesome. Bad Weather is great. Bank Brewing is going to be on their Barrel Theory, which everyone loves in St. Paul right now. Bemidji is pretty good. They're up there. Bent Paddle, obviously, that's their backyard. Big Axe, we've talked about on here. They're from Nisswa.
Hoops. Castle Danger. Can't forget Hoops.
Hoops will be on there. Blacklist. Great Duluth representation, of course, which is, you know, expected. Again, we talked about Northeast earlier and kind of this 280 stretch by St. Paul, Minneapolis, the border. Duluth is right up there, too, and Rochester's working toward that as well. Just so many great places, and I've had the privilege to go to a lot of these places. I've driven quite a few miles to go try a beer, and my wife's mostly okay with that. But it's worked out well where we've had vacations kind of in the area or family visits, or I've taken a day trip like we've done with the show to the southwest corner of the state. There's so many good Hoops, you said, Inbound, Indeed, Insight, Island City, Jack Pine, one of my favorite places. One of my favorite beers come from Jack Pine. Their Vengeance Cream Ale. That's their jalapeno cream ale. Anytime I know someone's going up to the Baxter Brainerd area, I say, hey, I need a crawler. So I have a lot of nice friends, so a lot of them bring me back beer. Liftbridge, LTD, Revelation L Works. We visited them. Oh, you didn't. I'm sorry. When I went up to Winnipeg this winter, I stopped there. They're in Halleck, very northwest corner of the state. My other friend I have went with me. We were on the way up for a bike race. Great beer, fun place. But it's a place you have to look for because it's in a small little rural community in northwestern Minnesota. Shakopee Brew Hall, Summit's going to be there, Surly, Tanzenwald, 320 Brewing, Tin Whiskers, just list of places. So go check out them. You can just probably Google or Bing if you prefer All Pints North or Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild. You'll find it and see the whole list. Tickets are now available. I would recommend anybody who's got a free Saturday or even a free Friday or free weekend, head up, check it out. We'll be there. So you can come say hi to us. And if you want to say hi to us online, you can do that too. We posted that video we said recently about the Thunder Lizard IPA, the double dry hopped IPA. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook and Twitter at OnTap Norfield, Instagram at OnTap with Corey and Ira. OnTapNorfield.com is our website. You can find all our previous shows. We've got 35 in the books now. Facebook is a good place to look to see who's coming up on our shows. In the future, we've got the summer into the fall book now. I've got most of those up there, and I'm working toward filling that out even more. I've got a tentative one-year schedule put together, so I'm starting to reach out to people. Not so much for next spring yet, but, you know, into the fall. So, great show, right?
Of course.
So stick around.
And now time for Beers of the Week, brought to us this week by Firehouse Liquor of Dundas. Our first offering is from our good friends over at Insight Brewing, who's been sending us a lot of nice samples lately.
Thank you.
Just a couple weeks ago, they sent us the Rowdy Uncle, which was really kind of a fun, different beer, both from storyline and obviously flavor. You know,
Moscow Mule.
Yeah, Moscow Mule goes well with the inspired. Crazy Aunt, the gin and tonic inspired beer. Yep. So, but this one is the autonomous nature of Dankbot. It's their extra dank India Pale Ale. And as you can probably tell by the term dank, they're really trying to go with a really big hoppy flavor, kind of really get a little extra bitterness to it. Balances well though with the, you know, the IPA style, which is, it's a lot of hoppiness, but it's not a big flavor to it. Coming in at only 6.5%. As always, they have a little story in the back. I'm not going to read through the whole thing, but Another solid beer from Insight. They're claiming it's the hoppiest beer they've done yet. I can definitely see that with the amount of, you know, just big, bold flavor up front to this one.
So it comes at 91 IBU. Definitely has the Dank hops going on. You know, I guess citrus flavor coming through. I'm not sure if their story has changed. That one definitely came out before their double IPA, so maybe it's just a story they haven't changed. But I know their double IPA I don't think is in distribution anymore. It's their Phantom Taxi. That was their double IPA, a beer I really enjoyed, but I don't think it's out anymore. So Dank Pot is obviously still out, very much still out as we're drinking it right now. So maybe it's not the hoppiest beer they've made. Maybe that's changed, but regardless, definitely a lot of that hop does come through. It's got some nice earthy tones, very citrusy, and dankness, as all the kids say. So very solid offering. Insight, again, another great beer that they put out. This one doesn't maybe get as much attention as some of their more adventurous beers they put out, like the Crazy Aunt, the Rowdy Uncle. But they've got a lot of good, what are pretty standard styles. IPA is a standard style. This is a solid offering. And the other beer we have today from Firehouse is the Elysian Super Fuzz Blood Orange Pale. And I don't know if this is intentional or not, but the guy that's on there, the logo, definitely looks like Prince to me. I don't know about you, but big afro, big glasses, kind of has a similar facial shape. Probably for copyright reasons, not Prince, but that's who I'm seeing this, especially with like a Super Fuzz kind of thing. I kind of feel like that's a Prince.
Yeah, I think they took a different face, but definitely gave it the Prince makeover.
Yeah, the Prince sniff there, as we would put it. And this is a Super Fuzz Blood Orange Pale. So for me, I'm not actually getting that much orange through it. You know, blood orange is kind of one of those interesting flavors. It was pretty popular a couple of years ago as a adjunct addition with
IPAs. I'd even say last summer it was really pretty popular, and I'm still seeing it out there a little bit now.
I mean, it's like any, I almost call it a fad. That's an opinion, and I will say it's a fad. I don't see as much anymore. I think it's still lingering because people are getting around to it. I was never that much into it. This is a fine beer. It's not something that I'm going to seek out. Legion's out of Oregon, so they're probably not going to hear this anyway, but...
Seattle.
Oh, is it Seattle? I thought it said Oregon. Oh, Seattle, I'm sorry. Seattle, Washington, but it's okay. It's not really hitting the mark for me.
I'm getting a little bit of almost a... Yeah, I see where you're coming from, because I have a little more of a confused taste to it. I mean, I was hoping for this to have a little more really fun flavor to it, because Legion, their main one is their Space Dust, and... Mm-hmm. There's, even though I know that's from a larger brewery, and you know, but when I'm out and about, even when I was in Vegas, I was able to have some Elysian Space Dust, and I definitely like the brand. But this one, yeah, I can see what you're talking about. I had some blood orange, a couple good blood orange beers last summer, namely at the State Fair, and really enjoyed them. Yeah, this one, I think the taste is confused. I can't quite pick up the blood orange. It's kind of hiding the IPA.
When a beer broadcasts that there's a fruit adjunct to it, like blood orange, I'm expecting that to be not necessarily prominent, but noticeable. For me, it's really muted. I hardly taste it at all. And again, we say time and time again, we're not, you know, Cicerones, as the easiest term to use. But we have, I think, okay palates, and I'm just not picking up any kind of fruit flavor with this. I get a lot of the hop presence, and it's for a pale. I think that's overwhelming for that blood orange that's supposed to come through. So, I mean, go try it. It's not a bad beer. It's just not, of all the beers that we've tried in this show in 36 episodes, it's not going to be one I'm probably going to go spend my own dollars on.
No, but it definitely hasn't been the worst beer we've had either.
Of course.
But if you want to try either one of these beers, or
especially the Elysian Super Fuzz,
but if you want to try any of these beers or any of the other beers we've talked about in past shows, you can. They can be conveniently found at Firehouse Liquor South on Highway 3 in Dundas.
Look for the fire truck. We're pleased to bring in now Carla and Kent Schettelbauer, proprietors of Reed's Landing Brewing Company. Thanks for joining us in studio.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
we're pleased to have you in studio now. You guys have been around for a while. The business itself, you guys just took it over last year, and we're going to delve into that. But for those who aren't familiar with Reed's Landing Brewing Company, and probably Reed's Landing for that matter, where can folks find you?
Yeah, it's just south of Red Wing and just north of Wabasha. So it's about 30 minutes from Red Wing, south of Red Wing, and just outside of Lake City in Wabasha.
And it's a great drive. Ira and I have talked about it on here before on this show. We both have taken the drive, and it's nice because every so often now kind of a brewery or brew pub has popped up. Red Wing has one. Mm-hmm. There's one in the works in Wabasha that should be opening soon. You guys, obviously, and then down in Winona, there's one. So
Well, and Reed's was there before even most of those. So
yeah, 2011, you know, the 2011. Business had started, right?
That's right.
Beautiful deck, beautiful view of the river, and great beer.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about the space, but before we get to that, I mean, you guys haven't been involved since 2011. You guys became owners last year when the original owner sold, correct?
Yes, in March.
In March of 2017.
17, so
yes. You're hitting about 14 months?
Yes.
You're still upright?
Yes, amazingly, yeah. Yes.
How's the 14 months been?
It's been good. You know, lots of challenges, but good challenges. I think we're starting to hit our stride. We've been through just about every experience I think you can been through, that good and bad, and so
and seasonally.
Yeah, and we've learned from every one of them. So, you know, we're doing real well.
What interests you guys? Because I've read a little bit about your background, and you both had, you know, corporate lives, and you're not in your 20s, obviously. So, why enter this business at this time?
Yeah, so we were customers. We were looking for a boat for the weekend, and found one in Wabasha. When I was growing up, we spent a lot of time on the river down in that area camping. So, but we found the boat that we wanted in one of the marinas in Wabasha, and was a customer. Went in one night and said, "Wow, we really like this place. It's you know, there's a draw there when you get inside." And we said, if it ever came up for sale, we'd buy it. And sure enough, a couple
now
weeks
that come
later,
up just a couple beers. You're just talking at that point, or was it
it was
serious
that way.
Premonition at that point?
No, it was just, you know, this would be something that we could do together. So we wanted to invest in a business that we could do together and bring us into retirement. And it was everything happened at the right time.
Everything aligned at the right time.
Yeah, it did. So we took the leap and invested, and it's been fantastic ever since.
Now, yeah, like you said, we're not in our 20s, so we were, you know, we're
early getting, 30s.
Yeah, exactly. We were getting to the point where we're trying to think about, okay, you know, we don't want to stay in the corporate world forever. It's been a long time that we've been doing that, and ready for the next chapter of our life. So, and we love that area down there so much. So we really were just looking for a good investment that we could parlay into a retirement project for us. And this just was perfect.
Now, were you looking for any small business that would provide that opportunity that aligned with some of your interests, or was it particularly brewing and the restaurant industry? Because you guys are a full kitchen as well.
Yeah.
Was that a big part of it? I mean, I don't want to say it was the right business at the right time, but I'm assuming you guys had an interest and have an interest in the industry itself.
Mm-hmm. It was the brewing that really interested, I think, at least myself.
Yeah.
So if it would have been just a bar restaurant, we probably wouldn't have invested. Mm-hmm. But the brewing is interesting. And
Just gave it that level of interest that we thought would keep us really engaged and passionate about what we were doing, as opposed to just kind of a, you know, run of the mill business. And when we were originally looking, you know, we really kept an open mind. Because down there's not a whole lot of opportunity that comes up. So you really have to kind of keep an open mind and not sort of put yourself into a box of, well, I want to do this. And if I can't do this, then we're not going to, you know, we won't do anything. So the goal was just to find something that would fit into our retirement plan, something that we could do together and would be interesting to us. And just sort of ironic that in literally the tiniest little town you could probably find along the Mississippi River, there was this awesome, historic building, you know, a brewery with great beers, a great restaurant, you know, just everything just came together so perfectly.
Yeah, it sounds like it was, you know, is it kismet? Is that the correct term? Ira, I feel like you would know that.
I'm not sure.
No, okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot there, but it seems like things align correctly at the right time.
Yeah.
So working with Bob, how did that happen? The former owner and the originator of the brewery, he's still on staff mm-hmm. helping with the brewing end of it. What was the transition like once that conversation started? He said, okay, I'm looking to move on myself and bring in new folks. How long did that take to come together? And then how the agreement come on to say, hey, we want you to stay on and help us on the beer side of things?
Yeah, we were very fortunate to have Bob stay on. He is he's really the brains behind all of the brewing. He is he's a fantastic brewer and brewmaster. And he was very interested in making sure that the business was successful.
Well, so he actually, baby, right?
Yeah, exactly. He built it from the ground up. So, you know, he actually volunteered to stay on as the brewmaster and make sure that it was a smooth transition. And like I said, we were really fortunate because there's a lot to learn on the brewing side. So, and you know, now he's transitioning over to one of our employees to be the brewer and ultimately the brewmaster. So he's still on after a year.
So it's been a couple year transition.
Yeah, about a year and a half. He said he'd be around for a year and a half to help us out, and he's been there for us. So
he's been incredibly gracious through the whole process, and has from the very beginning. I think he understood that it would be. It might be difficult to find somebody with brewing background that would take over that business because of where it was located.
Sure.
So I think he, early on, he, in the process of him selling, he realized that he may have to play a role. Plus, you know, like you said, Kent, he has that vested interest in seeing it continue to succeed. So, you know, it was never, there was never a panic moment for us. We're like, oh my gosh, if we do this, you know, we're not going to have a brewer and we're going to have to, you know, because he said all along that he would stay on and train whoever, either us or, you know, if we hired someone, or that he would make sure that they got up to speed with what they needed. And he's still developing recipes for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be a role that he plays, you know, ongoing. We don't know. We haven't really had those discussions, but he does make incredible beers. So if we could tap that knowledge from him on an ongoing basis, that would be pretty terrific.
Let's talk a little bit about the beer. When people come in on a nice Saturday afternoon, they're driving mm-hmm. down there, what can they expect to see on the menu? It changes occasionally, right? But you probably got some foundational beers.
Yeah, we typically have we have one beer right now that we have on all the time, and that's our Cremona. That's a cream ale. It's a nice lighter craft beer, so it's a good beer for people that maybe aren't really into craft beer or kind of a little bit like, wow, that's really, you know, some of those beers are pretty strong and very hoppy and stuff that people aren't really accustomed to. That's a really nice craft beer.
Eases them into
people to try and kind of start getting their palate accustomed to something beyond
flavor.
The commercial. Yeah, something beyond the commercial beer realm, you know, which I think the American palate is really, really sort of tapped into lagers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it takes some time to kind of switch that over. But we're bringing on a sixth Bright Tank. Right now we have five house brews that we have, and then we have a guest tap. So we're bringing on a sixth Bright Tank so that we can have six house taps. So when we do that, we'll probably bring on a couple more of our more popular beers and have them on year-round. So the Cremona is always on. And then we have a beer called Captain Amber that is brewed with Captain Crunch cereal.
Mm.
Yeah, it's very, very popular.
Grain.
Yeah, it's very popular. We usually only have it on in the summertime, but I think we may want to bring that on year-round.
Does it retain some of that sweetness?
I'm guessing a little caramel at the end.
It does.
I guess it's low sugar on the.
Yeah.
Before you put it in.
So the cereal is really just the sugar.
Right.
You know.
It ferments like the other.
Right.
Sugars in the.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But every once in a while, it is the weirdest thing. I don't know if it's psychological or if it's real, but every once in a while, you get a little aftertaste and you get that Captain Crunch cereal flavor. Mm. And it really just like takes you back.
Could be your placebo beer.
Yeah, to your childhood and like, you know, the roof of your mouth getting all torn up from eating Captain. But it's very, very popular beer. So we sell a lot of that.
Well, what's your favorite beer to consume at your establishment?
Oh gosh, that's a tough question.
It is.
What about you?
I don't know, it's a tough choice. There's our Weizenbach is a fantastic beer. That's probably my favorite. And then we just brought on a Northeast style IPA.
Okay.
It's called Daymarker. So
is that a river terminology?
It is. Okay. Yeah. There's a little green box on the sign that we have in the brew pub, and there's 763 in that box, and that's the location marker for Reed's Landing. So, you know, that's a fairly new beer for us, but it's been very popular. Hard to brew. We can't brew it fast enough.
Yeah.
So it's a fantastic IPA. So that may be a candidate for one of our year-round beers too. We'll see how it goes.
I'm sure that would sell.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's very balanced right
now. And yeah, yep.
It's hard for me to pin down my favorite.
Whatever's in your hand.
A lot of it is depends on what mood I'm in. Sure, I don't, sure. You know. But we have our Nitro Womundi, which is a milk chocolate stout, is just fantastic. It's like dessert. It's so good.
So do you have that on beyond the cooler months, or?
We have that. We'll have that on probably all summer.
You will, okay.
Yeah, and then I think we may do a pumpkin porter on Nitro this winter.
Well, I'll be down. Be over.
Down. Geez. Yeah, I think it's south from here. And then our Irish Red, the Dingle Wanker, is one of my favorites as well. So it's just really, it's really tough. I mean, they're all fantastic.
Yeah.
It sounds like a pretty diversified list, and you only named 6 or 8, so it's good to have that variety in there. You really do offer then something for everybody.
We're working on a passion fruit wheat right now.
Ooh.
Or I should say Bob's working on a passion fruit wheat.
You're there for moral support.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah. And you buy the ingredients.
Cheer him on.
The
name.
Yeah.
So he's perfecting that right now, so we're hoping to have that on sometime this summer.
That'll be a good thirst quencher.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about adding a bright take in. What brewing capacity do you have? What's the...
So we're a 3-barrel system, okay. Electric, and you know, you can go on the website. There's pictures of our brew room and fermenters and bright tanks. But basically, it's 3-barrel. It's about 100 gallons each brew. So we'll have with the 6 bright tanks, 600 gallons of capacity for beer.
It gives you a lot of flexibility though, brewing at that size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you. It'll be great to have 6.
We have 5 fermenters, and we may expand out our fermenters. It's not so much the brewing capacity, because, I mean, we could brew all non-stop. Week, yeah, you know, and but it's where do you put it?
Right.
You know.
Do you have space for much more room for the
fermenters? We do have, on space.
Yeah, but we do have some room for expansion, but this is the problem that we're going to run into as we hopefully continue to grow and do different things, catering and events and things like that, is capacity. I mean, that's a huge challenge for us.
And we're seasonal, so, you know, it takes about, you know, 4 weeks in a fermenter, and then you got to let it condition in the bright tank for another week. So, you know, you're really 4 to 6 weeks out. So that
sure
takes up a lot of capacity. So you just can't turn it fast enough. So...
That's money just sitting there.
It is. Mm-hmm, it is. Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing that we've seen with the expansion of breweries in the last 5 years is obviously the focus on beer, but not a lot of places that complement that with the food side.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people agree that's really an important part of it. And that's why you see food trucks obviously showing up a lot of breweries. Mm-hmm. But there aren't that many places where you have food on site that's made at a real kitchen. So how do you balance those two components of your business? Because obviously a lot of people say restaurants on their own are pretty difficult to manage and run. Breweries have their own challenges. So how do you balance the two?
Yeah.
It really is two businesses in one.
It is.
It's challenging from that perspective.
It is. I mean, luckily, again, we inherited a very good staff. Our head chef, Casey, is cordon bleu trained. So she knows how to run a kitchen really well. She has tremendous skills and great recipes, good instincts.
Mm-hmm.
We try to keep our menu pretty simple but diverse, so there's really something I feel like there's really something for everybody. You know, if you want to come in and have a steak, you know, it's on the menu. If you want a burger, if you want your typical bar food, it's there. But if you want something a little up from that, you know, we have a wonderful risotto dish and pasta and flatbreads and things like that. So we just try to keep it. We want to appeal to the largest audience that we can, and not get into a confined sort of
place.
Like that niche. You know, everyone it's like a lot of people try to find their little niche place, their little niche thing that they do in the market. Which can be good when you have a large, audience
footprint
that you're pulling from somewhere in the cities or the suburbs. You know, you can narrow your focus a lot easier because there's many more people.
Focus on Parisian gnocchi and only.
Yeah, exactly. But when you're where we are, you know, we have to draw from a lot of different areas and bring people in. So we've tried to keep it really appealing on a lot of levels.
Do you have a somewhat of a seasonal menu? Does it change with what's available?
It does change, actually. Mm-hmm. We change our menu in the spring and the fall. So we'll have heartier, you know, more comfort food type dishes on our winter menu.
I think you had chili on there when I was there.
Yeah, we have soups every day, and our chef makes terrific soups. And then we also have specials. So those change up a lot. So even if you've come out and you've had everything on the menu, there's still something different every few weeks that we put out. But in the summer we'll have lighter fare, more sandwiches. We have a cheese plate on our menu right now. And then we keep some of our solid favorites on there year round, like the shrimp and grits, or we'll have the steaks year round. But in the winter we try to do more comfort hearty foods, and in the summer lighter fare. So again, just trying to appeal to people and kind of what they're looking for.
Well, and it's a beautiful dining space. I mean, and you talked about being a historic building. You walk in there and it's just this gorgeous space. The bar is beautiful bar to the right, you know, even without, you know, people knowing that it's a brewery, you walk in there and that's a really nice restaurant with a beautiful view. I mean, I think that alone is one of the reasons to go down there. I've had a little bit of food there, but everything I see come out looks amazing, smells amazing. It is a really beautiful space. So even if you're trying to go down there for a beer, get the food, check out the space. I will attest to that.
We do get pretty good reviews on our food. Yeah. So, and you know, the beer is very good, but people would come more, I think, for good food and have the beer. They come back for the food and the beer.
Sure.
If we just were good beer and, you know, not such good food, I think we wouldn't appeal to as many people. So we do put a lot of emphasis on making sure that our menu is appealing and the food is very good. We make most of our stuff from scratch in the kitchen, so it's very fresh. And
good food and good beer work so darn well together.
Well, and then the river, of course.
Let's talk a little about the appeal there. You got the patio deck off the side too, so I want to talk about the view and why the view is important, but before I do that, I want to talk a little bit about the historic building. I think Bob's family owned it since like the 30s. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing it predates that, right? It's probably turn of the century?
It's 150 years old.
Late 1800s.
Yeah. Late 1800s, okay. Yeah. And you talked about expanding potentially within or for additional outbuilding?
We're kind of limited on space.
Right.
So we're in a residential area pretty much. So, the township wants to make sure that you're doing the right thing for the neighbors and so forth. So we're pretty limited on what we can expand from a footprint perspective. Our expansion would be probably another location somewhere.
So the building itself, though, 150 years old, and obviously looks like it's been maintained pretty well.
It's funny because when we went through the purchasing process, of course, you have a building inspection.
Sure.
And the building inspector came in and literally could find nothing.
Yeah. Doesn't look like day over 80, right?
Right, which was shy because I was prepared, you know. Yeah, it's like, okay, this building is 150 years old and there's going to be stuff. Of course there's going to be stuff. Nothing.
Yeah, they didn't find
nothing.
Anything.
Anything is built like this should last forever. It's an awesome building. It's all brick. We've got the big floor-to-ceiling windows in the front. It was originally built as a dry goods store. So you figure in 1870, you know, there's no electricity. So they needed those big, huge windows in the front to let all the light come in so people could actually see the merchandise that they were trying to sell. So it's just got that old, you know, mercantile feel when you come in with the rickety hardwood floors and those huge windows and the beautiful view of the river right in front of you. We also have, I know you mentioned the deck, we also have picnic tables, which are, they're self-serve, so people can get beers at the bar, bring them out there and sit. They can order appetizers at the bar and bring them out there and sit. And it's dog-friendly, so as long as you're dogs on the leash, you know, you can bring them to the picnic table area. And again, just trying to appeal to as large an audience as we can and make it comfortable for everybody.
You never know who's driving down the road.
Right, exactly. So
or pulling up on a boat.
Yeah.
Well, when I went there last summer or two ago, I mean, it was a lot of bikers were there, you know, people on their motorcycles. Mm-hmm. So
we do have motorcycle parking as well. We're just trying to be all things to all people.
That's good. That's good.
So come winter, do you have the snowmobile traffic as well, or not so much on that?
Yeah, it's not a snowmobile trail close by.
Yeah, it'd be tough to... They'd almost have to come down the railroad tracks, which we do not advise.
Well, yeah. But you wouldn't turn them away. No, don't do it, though.
No, don't do it, but, you know.
There's only a train coming by about every 15 minutes, isn't it?
Yeah, there's...
Or at least seems like it.
It's an active railroad track, but that adds to the appeal. You know, it's always... I always love it when the train goes by. It's you're sitting there, or a barge, or, you know, really nice, beautiful... Riverboat, you know. The paddle boats come up in the summer. Sure. I mean, it's just... And all the boaters on the river, it's a lot of fun just to sit there, have your beer, and watch everything go on around you.
Well, you mentioned the floor-to-ceiling glass on the front end. So the front of the building faces east toward the river, and the river's probably not even 200 feet away, right? No.
Yeah, it's right there.
So the views are great, and you get year-round visitors because there's a couple birds that fly through, right?
Just a few.
Yeah.
Just a few.
Want to talk a little bit about the appeal of the view with the eagles coming through?
Sure, because it's one of my favorite things about it. And I mean, I think you and I, Kent, have sat in the window in the winter and said, you know, watch the eagles, and just, wow, I can't believe that we own this place and the stars. We can just sit right here and watch eagles all day long. And they're very, very active in the winter. We have some resident eagles. There's just south on the river, there's an island and there's an eagle's nest in it. So we have resident eagles that are there year round. Then we have the ones that migrate from the north and they winter in Reed's Landing. And then there's the ones that migrate and just pass through and go farther south. So we have a lot of eagle activity in the wintertime right in front of our building.
The river stays open there because of the warm water that comes out of Lake Pepin.
They kind of combine.
Yeah, right, it turns up a little bit, and it keeps that spot in the river open, so there's a place for them to fish. So
that's why you don't have snowmobilers coming down the river, because the ice doesn't freeze all the way through.
No way, not there, that's for sure. Yeah, it's open year-round, the river. And then the other great thing about it is very interesting, is particularly in the spring, is you get the melt, so you get the huge ice sheets that are coming off the lake. I mean, it's just, and then this last year we had swans that came through and stayed for about 3 weeks, pelicans. There's just all kinds of waterfowl activity that goes on right in front of our building. But the eagles are the most spectacular, and the best time for viewing them is anywhere from November through March. Toward the end of March, that, you know, the ones that are migrating or have stayed here during the winter, they're going back to where they live. But they start coming in November, and they are very, very active. Anytime during the day, you could see 4, 5, 6 of them just sitting in the tree right in front of our building, or fishing, or fighting each other.
Yeah, I think I visited you guys in February, and you were walking by every so often. Oh, there's another one. There's just point them out.
Yeah,
oh, there's another one.
For some reason, I have a knack. I can just pick them out. I don't know
like
what
a
it
speck
is.
Speck in the sky. Oh, there's one. Are you sure that's not an American black crow?
No. Yeah.
So for the resident eagles, have you started naming them yet?
No, because I don't really know which ones they are, but I know they have a nest. You can see the nest right down there. We've seen some golden eagles as well that pass through. They're a little bit more rare, but the eagle population is very healthy. It's every year we see more and more and more, which is great. So we know that they're thriving and doing well.
So outside of delicious beer, delicious food, great views, looking at the rest of the summer, is there a reason for people to stop by? You have any events coming up? Any? I know Wabasha sometimes has things going on. Anything on your docket for that calls out, or maybe any special beer releases you've got coming up?
Well, just the passion fruit wheat that we're working on, that would be the newest beer, and that's never been brewed before. So like the Daymarker, our Northeast IPA, is a brand new beer that we've never had on before. I don't think we have anything specific for the pub. There are things that go on in Wabasha. There's Riverboat Days in Wabasha. There's water ski days and Lake City, which is the first weekend in June, and Riverboat Days is the last weekend in July, and then Septoberfest is another big event in Wabasha that goes on between September and October, and it's a German festival, and that's when we'll bring our Weizenbach on, which is a fantastic beer. And then we do German specials and things like that for that. I think this year we're going to focus on trying to get to some beer festivals and just get our brand out there, get our beers out there for people that have never heard of us or have never tried us. So we're going to try to do some beer events this summer.
Mm-hmm. Wabasha is a happening town. They have that many festivals. I know because they have Grumpy Old Men Days too, right?
Yes.
That town's not very big, and they've got big events.
And come fall, they have that beautiful, they decorate the downtown both under the bridge with the massive pumpkins and then the corn stalks in every corner, and it's a really fun thing. I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, but we were taking the trip down. We'd stopped at Reed's, and we'd generally hit Wabasha and then come back up the other side, go one way or the other, kind of doing the loop, and come across a polka band playing outside the Irish pub, and we're driving by, and we just look at each other and we go, pull in.
Got to pull in and see that.
If there's a polka band in the street, you got to stop, you know. So those are the fun visits. You know, that's the kind of fun that I like about going up and down the river and stuff, you know, because Reed's has always been one of our stops. Yeah. You know, so
that's Septoberfest. And like I said, that's a 2-month festival, and they do really decorate the town, and it's so amazing what they do. What's nice about that is it goes on for that 2-month period. So it's not like there's one weekend where you've got to get there.
Sure.
You know, and I would encourage anyone to come out to see that because it's very lively and a lot of fun. They have parades. They have a lot of things for kids. But yeah, if you do that, then you got to make sure you come to Reed's.
And they're not even, 10 minutes from you?
Yeah, 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
Just right on Highway 61. So on your way in or out, we're right there.
And how far south from Red Wing? 25, 30 minutes?
Yeah, about 30 minutes.
Yeah, 15 minutes from Lake City.
So if you made it to Red Wing, you might as well keep going, right?
Absolutely. Well, you know, the prettiest parts are just farther down.
There you go.
A lot of people stop at Lake City, too, and you just go a little bit farther. Mm-hmm. And you've got beautiful bluffs, and I mean, the sunsets on the river there are just spectacular because the sun glows off of the bluffs, and they turn that nice pink because it's like kind of that pink granite, and you know, you're sitting in an Adirondack chair with your beer, watching the river, watching the sunset. I mean, it just really doesn't get any better, in my opinion.
Is it 61 that has like that big toy candy emporium thing?
Oh, Lark Toys. Yeah,
that's 61, right? South
that's
of you guys?
Kellogg.
Yeah. Kellogg.
So that's 7 miles south of Wabasha. And that is another fun place to go.
So that's just right past you then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have.
That place is nuts.
Putt-putt golf. They have an absolutely beautiful hand-carved carousel.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely gorgeous. And then if you're old like us, you can you go in and they have displays of old toys, and you know, so it's really a nice nostalgic. And then they've got a lot of toys out that people can play with, so I always kind of play with the toys too. But it's really a neat place, and the fudge and candy, and I think they've got a little cafe there for sandwiches or something. But that, you know, there's so much to do in that area, and it is crazy, like you said, because they're tiny little towns, but they've really worked hard at creating an atmosphere and creating events to draw people in and keep these little small towns viable and alive. And you know, it's so important. Small towns in America are a bit of an endangered species, especially the historic ones, you know. So it's really great when you see. And one of the reasons we like Wabasha so much is they really work hard to create fun events that draw people in from all over. And it's kept the town really, you know, of course, the marinas are there. And in the summer, the population doubles, and because it's just the best location on the river, absolutely the best location on the river to boat as boaters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got the river, and then you're just south of Lake Pepin. So you've got lake that you can go to, you've got river, you've got beaches you can beach your boat on. I mean, it's just, and we were so excited that when we found our boat and came down the first time and just fell in love with Wabasha instantly. So we're just really happy that we've had the opportunity to boat down there and now have a business and hopefully eventually move down there permanently and retire and
And then head down to Kellogg, get some ice cream, ride the carousel, and play Howdy
Doody. Exactly. It sounds like the perfect day, doesn't it?
Then go back home for a beer.
Exactly.
One question, and then I'll let you guys get out of here, because I don't want to let this go. When we were talking about expansion, Kent, you said potentially, maybe, possibly, a second location. You're only 14 months into this, so I'm not going to make you commit to anything, but I mean, I'm guessing you guys have discussed as a possible business plan down the road, whether that's 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, but... what are early discussions around that? Because I'm always intrigued to see how places expand, especially in the brew pub part, because state laws are tricky.
They are.
I mean, would it, unless state law changes, it'd have to go in Wisconsin, right? Depending on how your ownership is. Not that I want to go into too far into detail here. I'm just
there's a number of avenues we can go, and we've discussed them all.
You know, we could open a second location in Minnesota as a brew pub. Or expand into Wisconsin. So we really haven't nailed down a location yet. But, you know, we think we have a very good business model. We've been, thankfully, successful in what we've done so far. So if we could replicate that and bring it to another location, even better. Yeah. So it's just where and when that would happen. But we think we've got something pretty special there. So... but location is pretty important. So we want to keep we want to be in an older building, and we want to have a view of a river or a lake or something, just to remain consistent.
What you want.
Exactly.
One of the other goals we have is just to kind of find underserved communities, you know, smaller towns that maybe have that would have a population that could sustain something like that's just not getting the attention as far as restaurants and things like
and
that.
And good beer.
And good beer and good food. And
well, there's not a lack of those places, that's for sure. I just drove up to Winnipeg a few months ago.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Northern Minnesota, just dots on maps. And you see it down here, Southern Minnesota too, everywhere. Like you said, small town America. You're just surprised when you're heading on the state highway and all of a sudden two houses and one commercial building. And so people are still here, so that's good.
Yeah. So
for what you guys are doing special, just remind people where they can find it online so they can check in with you. And you have limited hours. Right, you're not open Monday, Tuesday.
We're closed Monday, Tuesday. We're open Wednesday, Thursday from 11 to 9, Friday and Saturday from 11 to 10, and Sunday we open at noon to 9, and we are open year-round, and those are our hours year-round. But we are closed Monday, Tuesday, and our website is rlbrewingco.com. And again, that's always up to date with all of our latest tap beers and menu items and specials and everything. I do a pretty good job of keeping that up to date regularly. So
very good. It's important for people, especially if they're taking drive down.
Exactly, because you know, it is a commitment. If you're in the cities, Southern Metro, you know, it is a commitment. So you want to make sure you're getting what you want when you come down there. But it is a beautiful drive. I would highly recommend anybody taking a day trip and just enjoying the beautiful weather and the beautiful scenery, and then getting down to the river and enjoying a beer and a burger or whatever you like.
That drive is about the easiest endorsement I think anyone could ever give.
Oh, yeah.
It's great, so.
And one of the other reasons it was so appealing to us to go to Wabasha is, you know, everyone has their cabins up north, and you're in that parking lot driving on a Friday night, and there is never traffic heading south.
Sure.
So you're able to really enjoy yourself and relax, and beautiful rolling hills, farmland. It's
beautiful.
It is.
Carla, Kent, appreciate you stopping in and chatting with us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Enjoyed it. Yes, cheers.
Hey, this is Andrew with the Style of the Week. This week we are talking about a category of beer. We're going to talk about gluten-free beer. Now, gluten-free beer is definitely a new thing, and it's been really popular with people with dietary restrictions who still want to enjoy the flavor and the social aspect of drinking beer without consuming gluten. Regular beer is made from barley, and that can be a problem because barley has gluten in it. So some enterprising brewers have found some alternative grains to use to brew their beer without introducing gluten into the process. Maybe the most popular one of those grains is called sorghum. And you could really use sorghum to make a whole host of beers. So you see gluten-free IPAs and gluten-free porters and stouts. And these are all beers that are based off of sorghum instead of barley, but brewed in much the same way. Now, the other option is what's called a gluten-reduced beer. And these are beers that use enzymes to break up the gluten so that there's very little, if any, gluten left in the final product. These aren't as popular in the market, but there are definitely some homebrewers who have taken to using these enzymes to make themselves regular, full-on barley-flavored beer that just has little to no gluten in it. So if you are someone who is on a dietary restriction and wants to enjoy some wonderful barley beer but not have gluten at home, maybe brewing it yourself is the best way to do it.
That is going to put a wrap on this show. Thanks to Carla and Kent for taking the drive over from Reed's Landing Brewing Company. Definitely a place we would encourage you to go check out. It's from, you know, Northfield, maybe an hour, 10 minutes or so. If you're coming from the cities, probably about the same.
Yeah, but by the time you're on the road and you're enjoying it, time flies by pretty quickly.
Well, and the beautiful,
especially once you get on the river.
And the beautiful thing is, obviously, they've got great food, but if beer is your spin here and you're listening to our show, so I'm guessing you have some vested interest in beer and all things beer. There's a couple stops along the way. I mean, if you're coming from the cities, you've got Hastings with Spiral now, you've got Red Wing Brewery, and obviously you've got Reed's Landing in Reed's Landing. So definitely go give them a drive. Definitely a place to check out. Good food, good beer, and good sights. So, and a couple good owners too to chat with. So I'm sure they'll give you a little time. They gave me time there last year when I came by. So go check them out. We've got some fun things planned for the summer. If you want to keep up with what we've got coming up on the show, we're on here on KYMN 95.1 FM out of Northfield, Minnesota, streaming live on kymnradio.net every other Saturday at 11 a.m. But you can also catch all our old shows either on their website or on our website, ontapnorthfield.com, or on podcast platforms like iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Google Play, iHeartRadio, and a number of other streaming services. And we've got a lot of fun things coming up this summer. Our next show is going to be July 7th. That's with Cannonball's Cheese. So wait, not drinks? What? No alcohol? We're doing something different with this show. So we're going to highlight another craft area of the area, I guess the best way to put it. Cannonball's Cheese doing a lot of good things out of Cannon Falls. Been only open for, I don't know, what, a year and a half, 2 years, already getting some national attention.
Yeah, I want to say almost 2 years. I think I first was aware of them down at one of the little art walks, mm-hmm. You know, the Saturday morning art festival or fair, whatever you want to call it, downtown Northfield, where I first had their cheese.
Riverwalk Market Fair.
Yep.
So they've been doing gangbusters. I've had their cheese, really enjoy it, and they're getting a lot of attention nationally, obviously regionally. So we thought it'd be kind of fun to do something a little different. We're not going to totally go outside of our box, our comfort zone. We are doing a pairing with our friends at Tillian Brewing Company. So two Cannon Falls businesses. We're going to have one of the guys on representing the brewing side. We're going to have one, if not all three gals from Cannonball's talking about the cheese side. And we're going to try to pair them together and kind of talk through pairings. We've talked about on the show before about how beer, while very much enjoyable by itself, often lends itself to a good pairing with food. And hey, cheese is food.
The product that I'm most used to seeing them with is they do a lot with cheese curds, but a lot of different styles and flavors of them and stuff. So, and no, we're not talking the Minnesota deep fried cheese curds.
No,
these
no,
are,
no.
You know, the just in the cheese curd things. And so
whole
they have
chilled cheese curds.
Yep. And so they have, you know, like horseradish or a jalapeno or
their queso is the one that they've really got attention for.
Dill and ranch. Yep. And I've got some hot pepper stuff right up in my fridge right now because I had to pick some of that up. That's got a little bit of a kick. I had to get the hot pepper because otherwise the cheese would have been gone real quick in this house. So if I get the hot pepper, I can enjoy it.
Well, we should cut
the rest of the family wouldn't, you know, be gnawing away at it.
We need to cut the show short so I can go get a sample, get prepared for the show. It's all show prep.
Of course. But no, even at the Riverwalk, just this last Saturday, I think they had about probably 8 to 12 different styles of cheese out.
Wow.
And that was just in the curd. So you could pick up in little packs to go pretty quickly. So
July 7th, they'll be on the show. And we're going to meet with them before then, obviously. It'll air here on KYMN Radio, 95.1 FM out of Northfield, Minnesota at 11 a.m. Saturday, July 7th. Our show will be online and available shortly after that through, like I said, ontapnorthfield.com or your podcast platform of choice. So that's a great show coming up. A couple weeks after that, we'll be up at All Pints North. So that show will come up later this summer. We're going to be hanging out with Spiral Brewing in July. We've got, I won't mention that one yet, but we got another one coming up in August. We've got a fun summer ahead of us. So I look forward to that. So thanks for joining me on this journey. We get cheese out of it, so that's good.
Yeah, of course. Cheese and beer.
How could you go wrong with that?
All right, let's pair up with a local beef provider. We
now you're talking.
Steak or jerky with the beer, we could really kick it up a notch.
I'd be good with that. So catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Search for On Tap, Norfield On Tap, Corey and Ira. You'll find us one way or another. We post videos, photos, places we visit. We have real fun on there and try to invite people in to have a little conversation. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Cheers.
Cheers.